you might even call it a moment of faith. So I think I found the key in here, and I'm like, I think this is the key, but I really don't know. I don't remember. Whatever. I tied a rubber band around this key for something, and I go over there. And as I'm heading up to it, I'm like, it's probably not the key. I think there's a key hidden here. Whatever. I go. I try it. It's clearly not the key. It just doesn't want to go in. I don't know what. Whatever. So then I go. I hunt around. I use my fucking flip phone as a flashlight. I know I just swore. And slip around on stuff, almost break my neck 4 times, get all my feet all wet from my thin slip-on shoes. And then as I'm about to just say, fuck it, and leave, I'm like, I'm going to try the key again. It was the key.
It was the key or the key's user? Because a key just doesn't not work and then work.
I know. Okay, so welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, Zach, it's Ian, Team Alpha, clocking in the 0 hour to talk about Interstellar, the new Chris Nolan joint. No Wally Pfister here, but it's still got a lot of Nolanisms in terms of visual things. The go-to flashback with set to music with no diegetic audio, usually involving somebody showing somebody something. I think he's used it. He's definitely used it since Memento, huh?
Used what now?
It's one of his, like, leitmotifs or something. That's like a flashback where you see somebody do something, and you're learning more about him over a voiceover while you're showing them do that thing. Kind of set. It's not quite slow-mo, but it's kind of, but it's all there's no audio in it, and no diegetic audio, and the music's theme is playing. He uses it in every movie.
But what you're describing is just a screenwriting trick because you want to...
Right, yeah, no...
You don't want to have everything be an info dump.
Right, no, I'm not saying... I'm not, like, so admonishing
show,
it.
You show dreams or flashbacks and stuff, and then you get the idea that that's what they did.
But he does it in a very go-to kind of medium shot with two people, two-shot kind of, like, one person is teaching somebody else something, and now there's another aspect to it now that we're in Act 3 or something. Anyway, going into it, I had managed to avoid most of the pre-net review, spoilery stuff. All I could kind of gather was that people were maybe a little bit of ambivalence. Where I stand on it now is kind of mirrors that, I suppose. There are things I really really liked about it, things that were really effective. I think Nolan films, for the most part, are still very intensely cinematic. They grab you in that way that people are always selling blockbusters as, you know, Bruce Willis goes on David Letterman to push the newest piece of shit. It's like, Dave, you ever been on a roller coaster? It's kind of like that. Well, I mean, that's almost a pretty good analogy for the way Nolan kind of does stuff. And I think a lot of that just comes from...
Has Bruce Willis ever said that to David Letterman?
He did once.
Oh, he did.
He was wearing an orange suit, I think, at the time. I think he was talking
about... He was joking, right? That was a joke line, because he does nothing but joke around with Letterman.
Even if he was...
After he shaved his head, he went on the show and he had an 8-ball tattooed on his head.
I'm sure. Some aspects of it are a little clunky, but for the most part, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I was grabbed by it. I found it to be fairly intense. There were a few moments in it that definitely hit me fairly personally because of certain dreams I've had. There's
your
just things...
Past, your past as a space pilot.
Space pilot.
Spice Girl.
Spice Girl, yeah. I mean, I think we should right now decide how... I mean, I think we'll want to spoil it. We'll want to get into it.
Nobody cares. Just spoil it.
Okay, so we're going to just talk about...
Nobody's going to listen to this if they haven't seen it.
You'd hope so. I would hope so.
It doesn't happen.
Because it's not like we're talking about a million other things either. It's not like we're talking about 6 other movies.
Let's just fold Monster Squad neatly into Interstellar. I think it deserves to be.
Well, you know the way time and space works.
The best part of Monster Squad is... at the end, Van Helsing appears out of the wormhole
right
to grab Dracula, and as he's pulling away, he does a thumbs up. which was like a probably a newer thing in 1987.
No.
And the kid goes, yeah, he does one to him too. It was obviously a joke, and I cracked up. Like, I lost it when I saw that. That was
good.
Awesome.
It's great.
That Van Helsing from 1887 was throwing out the thumbs up to the kid as he grabbed him, like, way to go, kid.
Maybe he was like...
The kid who was very concerned about homos in the beginning of the film.
Right, yes. Different time in those 80s children comedies.
Yeah. And that kid was the hero. The kid who had an adverse reaction to homos.
I don't remember the movie well enough to be like...
It starts with...
An actual scene where he's being homophobic?
It's Sean and his friend.
Using names.
And the principal is talking to them. And the principal is telling them that he doesn't cotton to them not paying attention in the lady who looks like a cat's class.
Right.
And he's like, well, we can explain. We were drawing pictures of monsters.
Right.
And then they talk to him about that for a while. And he's like, what's more important than monsters is math. And he has a conversation with them. And he mentions the cat lady one more time. Then he touches one of their shoulders as he walks past. And he's telling them how you know, and then he does some phrases to show them how cool he is. And as they leave the office, Sean's like, when I started school, nobody warned me about all the homos and cat people. And that's the hero. That's the hero. He's homophobic.
Okay.
And then it follows that closely by a scene where the older brother from The Wonder Years is calling the kid who's in the film is called Fat Kid.
Right.
A faggot repeatedly.
His name's Horace
after he cocks the shotgun.
My favorite. That's my favorite moment. You managed to careen this into completely unrelated.
that was what I wanted to do.
Review. So what did you think of Interstellar?
I had read some stuff before, and so I kind of even went to go see it begrudgingly. I wasn't even going to watch it. I didn't care.
Right.
Monster Squad is PG-13, I guess you're right.
Okay. Well, our friend Luke had read the script and both told us. He gave us the Van Helsing thumbs down.
I don't recall that, did he?
I remember he was sitting on your couch in your house, and he's like, you guys, it was like, not that, yeah, pretty.
I don't listen to what he says.
Yeah, which I could see reading the script of this without, like, the cinematic quality, maybe finding it much more ridiculous and incredulous.
It ended up being much better than I expected, and I was pretty blown away by, I don't agree with you that it's just, that he's just a visual cinematic director. I don't think he's actually a particularly... great director
in terms of
actors and stuff. He has a very good grasp of what sumptuous photography looks like, and he gets that out of whatever cinematographer he's using. That's all there, but I'm starting to see how he has really, you know, maybe he's a good director, because a good director relies on the strengths of the people he has working for him. And this had a phenomenal score by Hans Zimmer. It was a fantastic score. And he's had very memorable scores by Zimmer before. And I think that the combination of him using the best of the best as cinematographers and him having his own sumptuous, almost like diamond ring commercial, sense of style for how things are supposed to look.
Right.
And the colors and everything like that. I mean, and once again, that's the cinematography. But,
still shooting film,
but it's,
too.
It's him, yeah. He knows what he wants out of it. The mix of the music and all that stuff, like he
puts together and executes something very good.
There's not a lot of heart in his stuff, I don't think, because his movies are always about the idea, so they're kind of impersonal. They're almost like David Fincher, like that, except for Fincher's a much more kind of sly and wily type of,
and
he's much more cynical.
He stays much more thoroughly rooted in the shadows for the most part so far, I'd say. Even but, in things like Social Network.
Sure, but he's cynical. But the idea is that, like, they're cold and impersonal.
Yeah.
And this one, I think he really tried to push the envelope with the emotional stuff. And I think it was mostly good effect. And I actually think everything was positive about... I had positive reaction to everything, even including the running time, because I didn't feel it was overlong at all. I was actually very... I was very moved along by the whole thing. And I felt like I wanted to find out what was happening next. And I don't always feel that way in very long movies. But, and as a sci-fi film, it's very interesting. And I think they meant it to be, because you can't help but try to make a good sci-fi film without it aping things like, you know,
you can say 2001. Just get it out there, yeah.
2001, stuff like that. But the stuff that happens at the climax with him in the black hole is like M. Night Shyamalan stuff. And it was really hokey and contrived. Mm-hmm. And the fact that while he's doing this weird stuff in this plaid infinite bookshelf world, his now 35-year-old daughter or whatever is just by remembering things from her past, putting together that her dad is doing that from the other side, and it's just contrived nonsense. And that whole, how they explain how these things happened was contrived nonsense. Mm-hmm. That part was trash. It was garbage. It was pure M. Night Shyamalan.
Right.
The guy remembering his dying mother telling him to swing away, and he happens to knock over some cups of water because the aliens who invaded this planet didn't realize that they were allergic to water.
I think that's far worse.
Sure, but
you're right. I agree. This is, it falls into that weird category.
It's a supernatural sci-fi explanation.
In the third act, yeah, where it definitely almost falls into the kind of nebulous realm of the magical realism stuff to a degree, because it tries so hard to kind of have elements of science. And if this is by no means a hard science fiction story.
But that said, I like M. Night Shyamalan films, even the very worst. Right. I watch them, I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to see what terrible, how he explains this terrible thing. Because the setup is all, the setup and the one, he kind of makes M. Night Shyamalan films, but much, much, much better and better looking. In that he sets something up with a question, and the question drags you until it gets answered.
Yeah, and that's why you usually get that flashback follow-up where the question's starting to get answered, and you're seeing that the question is already sort of answered.
Inception is very much that kind of movie, and I've seen Inception a couple times now, and I still feel like it's an empty film, and it's dragged by the question. And the only thing interesting about it is the question, and he smartly enough in that one didn't answer it by the end of it. So by the end of it, you've just been dragged for 2.5 hours to a question, which is entertainment, and that's
conflict. That's why it's on a big screen. It grabs you strongest.
And he films it beautifully with a great sense of style. And you know, what's interesting is that I've been reading a lot of critics saying, in retrospect, they don't believe that he's a good action director, and I agree with that. But they were using that, making it a point about this film, and I think that was wrong about this film, because the action in this film, not that it's an action movie, it's a sci-fi movie.
But the set pieces.
Well, it was great.
The intensity. Great.
The intensity of all that stuff was fantastic. I didn't feel like anything dragged. He kept his scenes short enough. Overall, I think it was a very good film. I'm glad I saw it. I was pleasantly surprised. And much, much better than I would give him credit for a lot of his stuff that... I mean, there's nothing I haven't seen of his except for maybe Insomnia, where I didn't come out of it going, wow, even if I wasn't sure that I liked it.
Right. That first impression is always strong because of those things you said.
Absolutely.
About his ability.
Absolutely. And then when I look back at it, I'm like, man, cold, empty, this, that, you know, problems like that. You know,
because it's very written. The stories
absolutely
you get that.
And you know, it's funny,
especially here.
His brother is considered
a
top Hollywood screenwriter at this point. But this is, it's just pure nepotism. This is a guy who just writes for Christopher Nolan and makes these blockbusters with his brother. But it's just because they know how to work together. He gives him a premise and he writes it, and then they work it out together and stuff like that. You know, and
whatever works.
Doesn't that Wachowski movie look terrible?
I thought that was
doing some YA stuff now?
I thought that was a Netflix series. Well, no, that's with J. Michael Straczynski. But I thought that was going to be a Netflix series and not some movie. Maybe they moved it. Yeah, it doesn't look very good. It's too bad because Cloud Atlas was amazing. I like Cloud Atlas a lot, just for the ambition. And I think that's where I get a lot from Interstellar. I pretty much agree with you on everything. I felt the length, but I think I felt it more in an exhaustion and not like in a pace.
Hey, I gotta say this. This was astounding to me. This was it was under 3 hours, but it's over 2.5 hours.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And you did not get up to go to the bathroom one time
yet. Right, I went right before. As opposed to the feeble lesbians that got there late and had to push us around 2 or 3 times to get by. But at least they said thank you.
They were very polite.
Yeah, right.
Lesbians who needed to get up and go to the bathroom several times each.
They should have just sat somewhere else when they got there 10 minutes late. Oh, whatever.
No, but see, not everyone is like you who
is polite.
Nervously sits. You know. If we're with a group of 10 people, even you'll basically finagle it so that you find your way to the end thing, because you know you're gonna have to get up 7 or 8 times.
It's not even that
to go empty your.
Do you want to know what really is?
Bladder.
It's, I have a like weird claustrophobia thing. I need an edge. I don't like being stuck in with people. I'm sorry.
My uncle I saw Home Alone with my uncle in the theater, and that was the only thing I ever saw with him, because, and he lived with us while we were building my house. He helped my dad build a house. Totally claustrophobic, agoraphobic, xenophobic.
Okay. But, I mean, it's just that, I mean, I can get over it if I have to, but if I'm, like, stuck in, like, a group of people, I'm in the center, and it's just, I just, it's not even
what
like...
What do you think's going to happen? Someone's going to burn the screen, they're going to lock the doors, like, in Inglourious
Basterds?
It's
nothing like that. I think I just think that I'm going to have a panic attack and embarrass myself, and inconvenience a bunch of people. And if I feel something weird coming on, and I've got an edge, I can just duck right out,
right.
go get some fresh air, remind myself that I'm not important enough to be so worried about things, and then go back in and watch the goddamn movie, you know?
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, Interstellar is, it's not hard sci-fi, so anyone going into it looking for, you know, that's not how this, I mean, as much as maybe they did research and stuff,
it's presented
really
like hard sci-fi.
It's presented.
And it seems like they had, like, many times they mention things and talk about things, and I was convinced. And then it gets to the hokum the hocus pocus stuff.
Of course.
And I'm like, no, this is garbage. And,
yeah.
I, it's weird to compare those scenes, which still look great,
mm-hmm.
and have some great, you know, I really like Matthew McConaughey a lot, but I wonder if he was right for that role. Like, he did well. He did well as the pilot. I think he did well as the family stuff, but he's just too smooth and cool and relaxed and confident.
To ever be, dire...
It's hard to have him not be like that. I mean, you can tell when things are in trouble, but for him to, like... Having him as, like, a concerned father who's desperately trying to save a kid, it's weird, because he's good at emoting... He's a great actor. At this point, he is a great actor. He's one of the elites.
Thank Joel Schumacher for it.
At this point, he's one of the elites. But it's just weird to see him, like, did he do better than Tom Cruise could have done? Absolutely. Did he do better than...
Did better than Brad Pitt would have done.
Absolutely. But did he do better than any number of dozens of
big
other
stars.
Great actors could have done? I mean, you know, he could have just thrown Christian Bale in there like he always does. Or he could have thrown in...
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. You know, ever since I saw... So Hugh Jackman was great in Prestige, but ever since I saw The Fountain, it was a movie that I put off forever because I just, you know, was... So, and I gotta tell you, I'm against the idea of cancer. I'm anti-cancer.
I understand.
And it's a film about cancer. So I just didn't watch it. I finally watched it, and he was phenomenal in that. He was really... I mean, he's like just balls to the wall, like crazy emotive in that film. And he's really able to do that really well. So there's a bunch of actors out there who I don't know that they would necessarily have done what McConaughey did better, but would have seemed more natural for that kind of role.
I think, yeah, like, it's hard because, like, you talk about the hokey part, and that, I think, is when everything is so into question that's where it's hard, it's weaker. But I feel like he was a good choice because the farm stuff was, at the beginning with him, was good, was better because of him, and I think the pilot stuff was better because of him.
Sure.
And so those two things were so important for that character that, and I feel like he had a pretty good chemistry with Murph, with the daughter,
mm-hmm.
Which was kind of the big through emotional through line to pull you through the whole thing. So, I mean, yeah, I think that it was a good choice in the end. I mean, and a lot of that comes from this, you know, the reconnaissance or whatever the hell they're calling it now. Him and his agent sat down and plotted out a major comeback from, you know, Kate Hudson rom-com shitholes to, well, why don't you do an amazing HBO show at the same, and then also, well, you win an Oscar while that's happening for some go-to
but
Oscar
it wasn't just that, because the year leading up to that, he was in Mud.
He was in Mud.
He was in
Killer Joe,
which
I haven't seen yet.
He was in The Lincoln Lawyer. Was like, that was the first thing I'd seen from him in a long time. Where I was like, man, he's good in these kind of like it used to be that people started out their acting careers in like light thrillers,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them were like John Grisham films.
Right.
And then I remembered that he was in Time to Kill.
Right.
And like that's how Denzel kind of rose up. He was
right.
in Pelican Brief, and like all of them did that. Yeah, somehow McConaughey lost his way in there, but it was like he was starting over with Lincoln Lawyer. It's a decent thriller, and it's a legal thriller and all that stuff, and he was really good in it. He was just different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have any real problems. Casey Affleck was good in the little bit he had to do.
Yeah.
Even Topher Grace came in and just kind of played the right balance of like just being kind of like annoying and whatever. Michael Caine might have been the only one I had a few issues with, but not really. I mean, I don't know.
He's got his favorites. He's going to throw him in there every time. Yeah. I'm going to say something really quick about Matt Damon. Matt Damon was great in his role.
But that role,
I think it kind of played against typecast a little bit. And it was kind of a meaty part. And while I was watching, I was thinking, why did they have to cast Casey Affleck in that role? Why did they cast any of these people? At this point, he could just take people off the street. People are going to still go see the movie. Why does it matter if Matt Damon was in this part? He's not even credited in any of the trailers or anything. So why does it matter that he's there? And I started to think that people get to that point because, not just because they've reached a level of fame, because that's not going to matter to Christopher Nolan. He's doing what he wants to make at this point. He's writing his own stuff and directing his own stuff. So it ends up being that Matt Damon is at this point is just that good. All these people are just that good that you can just put them in these roles. And I've never really liked Matt Damon particularly.
Right.
But he was good in that. He's convincing in a way that misleads you about things. Now, moving on, Jessica Chastain is terrible and I hate her.
And everything?
I have not yet seen one thing where I didn't leave it going, gosh, that scene right there, I don't know why they use that take. That scene right there, I don't know why they use that take. There's got to be better takes of her saying these things so unconvincingly. Zero Dark Thirty I loved, and I couldn't get past any scene
she was in. I never saw it, so I can't really speak to her. I mean, I don't think...
She's just not convincing.
She was in Terminator Salvation, right, for 5 minutes, playing Claire Danes older. Wasn't that her?
No, that was Bryce Dallas Howard.
Okay. Anyway, no, I think it was tough because she had to be kind of a petulant child as an adult in some aspects, and that's kind of hard to pull
off.
Always
played. That's how she played in Zero Dark Thirty. She was like a petulant child.
Yeah, well, I think she did okay with that, which I'm not a good judge of acting because I generally get pulled in or I get engaged in the story mechanics enough that I'm kind of doing that. And to its credit, like I said, the movie did feel long to me, but it didn't feel long in a way where I wanted it to be over. I wanted it to it just felt very draining, very exhausting, because there was some really intense stuff in it, both emotionally and just viscerally and visually and the whole concept, like I said, the whole idea. And I'm always, as much as I know blockbusters do have their formulas and their ups and their downs, I still knowingly let it trick me sometimes, and I'm like, I don't know how this is going to end. I mean, for all I knew, you know, she could get the watch, figure out how to save humanity, and then get T-boned by a fucking truck on the drive back, and that's the end of the movie. You know, you could do that.
Yeah, but he wouldn't do that.
No, he wouldn't.
At this point, another problem for Christopher Nolan in particular is that, and I think it's well disguised by the fact that he's whether or not he's a good director, whether that's not the question, he's a great filmmaker at this point. He knows how to put together a package, and it looks fantastic, and it's just a fantastic, entertaining experience, is that he is using these tropes every time now, a guy with a dead wife.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Every single time it's becoming this now, you know?
And it is getting a little exhausting, but you put it in a new... You wrap it up in something
But it's because they're all very...
They're effective.
They're all very neat, effective packages.
Yeah, and they're well executed.
Yeah.
So you know that, like, when the daughter runs out as he's leaving and yells for him, like, that gets you, even if you know exactly what it's doing.
Sure.
It's like it doesn't... I mean, the pulling on the heartstrings, all that stuff happens in this movie in a way. With the soundtrack, with everything.
Once again, he's not making... He's not making films that are about characters like so many good filmmakers want to do. And do successfully or not successfully, you know. He's making movies about particular ideas.
Right.
And, like, this is a movie about the conflict of this guy leaving his family to save humanity.
I'd say
what's the more important thing.
Right. It's always trickier because there's always a lot more going on than he has time to really deal with. So there's a lot of loose ends.
I think he touched on most of that stuff.
He touched on a good bit.
You got to paint with broad strokes in some parts.
And in sci-fi, you do have to write a lot off.
He's able to cover that really well.
Generally because of the execution. At least on a first viewing, because you're so taken in with the effect cinematically. Yeah. I would say this. I like all of his movies. I think the ones I enjoyed the most intensely on a first viewing at the theater I generally am a little... I mean, it's not like it changes my star rating or whatever, but I'm generally a little more analytical of the second time and able to see, like, issues with... Not like in a major way. Like, but then the opposite is true for the ones I enjoy less. Like, so I liked Prestige and Dark Knight Rises less when I saw them on the big screen. But then the second time I watched them, I liked them. I liked Prestige a lot more the second time I watched it because it wasn't trying to be something.
I only ever saw it once. And it blew me away.
Yeah, and Dark Knight Rises actually was able to kind of tolerate. I was able to accept what he was doing a little more in that one and see it a little better because I had just watched
Dark Knight Rises together. Is one that a lot of the people are pointing to in reference to the contrived stuff in this film.
Right,
is like there comes a point in his films. In Inception, it happens all the time, but you can explain that away by the fact that it's inside dreams and crap like that. But at some points in these films that are getting long, he's just like, you can always hear his brother going like, well, how do we explain?
Yeah.
And he's like, doesn't matter. Just cut to the next scene.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, how does Bruce Wayne, how long was he in
the
pit? And then when he gets out, how the hell does he get back home? Right? Like, that sort of crap.
Well,
like,
there is an element there, but at the same time... I mean, it's fucking Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, it is.
And
it is. However,
he was barefoot too. He was barefoot too.
Yes. However, how does he get home? That's just a simple thing in a story where like you gotta at least say.
Well, that's where I mean when I say that these ideas end up being so built and so convoluted that there are things that yes. For example, at the end of this movie, the idea that she ends up that Brand ends up at the third option planet, mm-hmm. and of course it's just all done over voiceover, done over music, and the person that she was hoping to meet there is just dead.
Right.
And so it's like, well, is it all that optimistic that this is a livable world? It doesn't look that great. It looks like some rocks. It looks better than the last two.
The last two, yeah.
Yeah. So, but you're still left kind of being like, that's true. No mask, no helmet. So, I mean, I think he, in that sense, you have to give him that big check mark for, you know, I gotta love the ambition, you know? This is a big Austin, you know, movie, and he can get away with that. So I'd almost, because he's
one of the guys... How did you like those robots? Those were awesome. Those were rad.
It took me a second, but like, and then I was like, are those based on the kind of things that actually you're doing? Like, they actually are building
this awesome
thing. You need the comedic relief. We'll make it the funny robot.
And not even really funny. Just a robot has his humor settings up too high, and he's not really funny. He's just. And in fact, what's funny is that Tars or whatever his name is, the first of the robots. He's a bunch of his first jokes are about how he's going to kill them or leave them behind and stuff like that. Like it's very dark.
Yeah, it's pretty out there. Yeah, so it's not really there's nothing deep in the movie. I mean, even though it kind of is about big, you know, the big idea of what does humanity do if it's at the brink of its extinction in kind of a very real way. I think that he failed to really pull off the direness of that in some cases because. Yeah. Sure, you had moments on the farm, people coughing, but then you still cut to moments in this silo where people are just kind of wandering around in suits, clean-shaven and stuff. Mm-hmm. It never really felt like all the resources... Like the light should be dimming, people should be... Everyone should look like shit at this point.
The voice of Tars is Bill Irwin, who is a famed circus clown and the actor who plays Mr. Noodle on Elmo's World and Sesame Street.
No idea, then that's crazy. Yeah.
And then Josh Stewart is the voice of Case, and Josh Stewart is an actor who is on, like, Criminal Minds and Third Watch and crap.
Nothing then. I don't know why. He was doing a good Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton's got bigger fish to fry.
Maybe, yeah.
Birdman, that's supposed to be good.
I've heard. So, in that sense, yeah, I mean... I think some of the stuff towards the end, like you said, you talk about the hokiness of the actual, like, in the black hole thing, which is just, like, I'm pretty sure there's no mystery in the black hole. We know that what gravity does to physical objects, it's just going to crush it and destroy it. And that's just what happens. It ceases. It's vaporized. It's smashed.
Well, that's another thing that I didn't really think about. So the wormhole, theoretically, could be something that someone could put there. But the singularity?
Yeah.
Is that supposed to also be something that they put there?
They could put the wormhole...
That's too much,
If they put the wormhole by the singularity...
That's
they put it so that the exit was by the singularity. So that they could identify something That's an effective message, and then use it. Now, the truth of the matter is that it becomes one of those bullshit time travel paradoxes where it's like,
yeah, it always comes down to that.
How do they do that? Of course, why? And then why not make this happen earlier so that none of this has to happen? I mean, it falls apart there. It falls apart. I found the sort of human terror, almost horror element that sort of opened the beginning of the third act a little bit like I kind of expected it, but then I was disappointed when it did happen, and I thought, this doesn't quite, I don't get the logic. Is he just space madness? So Matt Damon just has space madness, which is totally believable. But then meanwhile, the other guy who had been orbiting for 23 years seemed pretty low-key, you know, kind of okay.
Yeah.
I would have liked maybe a few minutes with him just to get a sense of his sense. Because he was having a very tough time up there.
He was having a hard time, yeah. And then he dealt with it. And
yeah, he listened to the rain, which I've been doing lately when I go to sleep. I listen to the rain noises. I have little rain noises recorded, and it helps.
Yeah, that was a good character.
I like that character, yeah, quite a bit.
It was weird to see Wes Bentley in something again. When was the last time he was in something?
Was that Wes Bentley? Yeah. I don't know who Wes Bentley is.
He was the creep who filmed things in American Beauty. And then he was like, they were like, oh man, he's going to be great.
Oh right, he's the beardly guy.
Yeah, he's upcoming and great. And then he was in like a bunch of weird stuff. And then he was the bad guy in something. And then he was gone.
Right. Yeah, I kept thinking, he looks a lot like other people. But yeah, I'm like, I know I've seen this guy in stuff before.
And when I say he was gone, I mean like, he was suddenly in like Z-grade like motorcycle movies and stuff. Like I don't think he was exactly, but crap like that was right. Coming out, you know.
Nolan will do that. I think he fancies himself a guy that will just sort of occasionally throw people in it like that. Yeah. But I found that part didn't quite work for me. The intensity of everything that was happening worked. I mean, from a cinematic level, you know, now you got things spinning and orbiting and blowing up and the end of humanity, and you intercut it with like sort of a more grounded like brother sister conflict as sort of to sub sort of underline the craziness that's actually happening on Earth, and it comes down to the point where a guy pulls a tire iron out. I mean, I laughed audibly a couple of times in the movie.
I wonder how much money this is going to make, because it really is. They give him a lot of rope, because this is the kind of thing that like a studio pours a ton of money into. And the advertisement for and stuff, like they sunk a lot of money into this thing. Like, what if nobody wants to see a 3 hour kind of 2001-ish space travel? It has way more action than something like that in it,
right?
But like space travel, I just don't. Unless it's about aliens and crap, I just feel like that. You know, I feel like people would rather see a YA thing.
It'll all depend on which way. I hate to say this, but it's going to be very political, and it's going to be fairly polarizing. And it's going to all depend on whether or not the Rotten Tomatoes spins it as, this is pretentious garbage that's empty, or this is a fucking triumph of the human spirit. And, you know, either you're smart because you go see it and you like it, or you're too dumb to get it, so you go see it anyway, hoping that you'll get it. Maybe you see it a second time, that kind of thing. And who knows? I mean, our audience was fairly riveted. And
well, as far as you can tell, it was our audience was primarily us and lesbians.
Right. Yes. A few children that mostly were quiet. One person said two or three things at certain moments. A few huhs and haws. A little bit of chuckling for the robots. But I mean, in terms of engagement, I feel like it grabbed, like it did with me. I feel like everyone that watched it was grabbed by it and kind of held to it, and everyone was just eyeballs up there.
Right.
Engaged with it. Whether or not that's going to translate to a lot of people wanting to see it again, which is, you know, a lot of 14-year-old boys wanting to see it again, which I guess is still usually the big cinematic chunk of the percentage, I don't know.
Well,
it's not a Batman movie, but Inception did really well, didn't it? Or did it just do kind of okay?
I think it did well, yeah.
It did
the 100-plus million deal. I mean, this was originally, I think Jonathan Nolan actually was, without Christopher Nolan's involvement, he was hired to write it for Spielberg years ago. This was something
Spielbergian element, especially.
This was a Spielberg baby. This was one of the things he was wanting to make for a long time. And whenever he left the project is when Nolan attached himself or something like that.
He must have had pangs from AI, because it's another one of those ones where the ending kind of falls apart and gets hokey and weird.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe. He did his one, and then I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, the comparisons are easy. The comparisons are also maybe not entirely all that accurate. This is as close as I hope anyone ever gets to trying to do a 2001 remake. It's not at all a 2001 remake, but I mean...
There was a video game for like the old 386, 486 computers that was called The Dig. And it was made by LucasArts with Steven Spielberg as executive producer for it. And the plot of it was astronauts going through a wormhole to find a new planet. And it's interesting to see, like, and that was like 20 years ago. It's interesting how, like, I'm pretty sure that this was something where, like, he held on to that and carried it through to the point where it was starting, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's an idea. I mean, the concept, and then you play with the idea, the relativity concept. And
he studied relativity for, like, 4 years or something like that.
Okay.
Like, at Caltech or whatever. I don't know.
Well, you'd want to have a pretty reasonable understanding of the stuff you're kind of playing with.
It was Caltech, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Jonathan. Jonathan was doing that as he was hired to write it by Spielberg.
Well, good, yeah, that makes sense.
He worked on it for 4 years. That's a good amount of time to write a script.
Yeah, something you'd really be sussing out for a while.
I hate that so much. I hate the sussing. I can't imagine with a movie like this. Like, I would have written a draft,
mm-hmm.
and I'd be like, that's it. If you don't make it from this draft right now, I quit. I'm never doing this again. And they would be like, well, how about you... And I would just walk away.
Wow. One and done, huh? So one bullet, one kill.
Speaking of that, I'm very proud of Lennon and Grant, because they've got a third... Did you ever read their book?
Yeah, I read their book.
So they make a big point out of the... Like, there's several chapters devoted to the fact that they will make money hand over fist every time there's a Night at the Museum sequel.
Okay, right.
Because they are the creators.
Right,
because
yeah.
it's created by... Even if they don't write it, it's their property. And so they're going to make... And, so that's awesome that a third one's coming out now.
Yeah, hey, you know, if you create something that's big, then you just keep your name on it and...
It's weird because, like, their mainstream stuff is really trash.
Oh, yeah.
but I still, like, I'm still excited for them because, like, the little stuff they do is just so funny. Like, like, you know...
Yeah, that's what you do, like it, you know? That's what you do. And The State, they were members of The State back in the day. And Lennon was in Dark Knight Rises. He was the Doctor.
That's right.
He shows up in little acting bit roles all the time for stuff.
I don't think he's a bad actor at all. I think he could probably.
He could. I mean, the Monkey Torture.
I've been watching. Did you watch Fargo?
I've seen the whole thing.
So as I'm watching it, I'm like, it's weird. They're like they're kind of like forcing Odenkirk into things now, and he's still just like he's still a comedic actor.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, even in
Breaking Bad.
In Breaking Bad, like which you get so much acclaim for. He's playing a comedic role.
Oh yeah, no, he's totally.
He's a comedic role. Like he's mm-hmm. he's just doing a comedy thing, and it's all based off his character as a dumb guy. You know,
kind of yeah.
But a dumb guy with like savvy with certain
sure,
things.
You know, he's like, well, first you have to give me a dollar.
Yeah
no, it's fun. I don't. I guess to wrap up Interstellar, got me. I mean, I will tell you. So the thing that really grabbed me the most, and it was just is the first planet. That is
that's haunting. It's haunting.
Essentially,
it's nightmarish.
The underlying components there of being heavy, having to move through, trudge through something mm-hmm. because something horrific is coming towards you, or you mm-hmm. need to get somewhere, is the essence of a nightmare I have probably three times a month.
Nice.
On some level, like where I wake up physically exhausted. Yeah, I should probably have that checked because I don't know what's happening to my body. But when I wake
it's not
up,
it's a body thing. It's your mind. Computing things that happen in your life and something that you have.
Well, it's continually happening to me.
Well, that's something that you're continually allowing to happen in your life.
I know,
and
right?
Your mind is trying to deal
it's
with
it. It's a go-to.
It.
It's always like trudging through mud, can't move. It's so painful.
It probably has something to do with anxiety.
Absolutely, it does. But I'm just saying that moment with the like, and I'm not good at predicting movies or anything. But like, I was a split second ahead with the "That's not a mountain." I'm like, that's a fucking tidal wave.
You hadn't seen that in any trailers?
I haven't watched them any. I've tried to stay within
good
trailers.
You did good
because, I did real good
because I saw a couple of early trailers
and they show the
no. They, well, they don't even. I mean, they show them walking through the water and stuff, but they never showed that part. And I finally saw a longer one,
mm-hmm.
and they even have at one point him going like, "That's no mountain," and like, ah, we got out of here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, so it's just the kind of thing where they start spoiling stuff like that.
As soon as it, that's what
you have to say. I don't care. Like I said, I went into this very cynical, and I allowed myself to spoil things, and I read reviews. I knew what happened. Essentially, the movie. I didn't spoil specifics at all.
Right.
But I was pleasantly surprised because of
it. I was in the same way, but I didn't do the spoiling. I had the perfect experience of having just heard just enough kind of negative stuff to be like, okay, to temper me.
All right, so what are you giving me?
I have to give it like a real, like sort of a tentative 4 out of 5, I think. Just for the process, the experience of seeing it this one time, I have to give it a really high rating.
Once again, you talked mostly negatively about it, and then you give it a 4.
I didn't talk hardly negative at all.
I was pleasantly surprised, and I talked very positively about it. I'm going to give it a 3.5, and that's a very, and I think that's a very good rating. And Monster Squad, I'm going to give 3 out of 5.
Oh, Monster Squad is a solid 3. It depends on the genre. It depends on the experience. Like I said, I completely wasn't really thinking about anything else in my life for the 3 hours I was watching this movie, but I was being engaged.
I wasn't thinking about anything else in my life when I watched Monster Squad.
Well, that helps. I'm usually, unless I'm, you know, a little sauced, kind of always anxious about other things and relating, or really doing the script analysis thing, which I was still doing a little bit here, but for the most part I was able to get out of. Yeah, it's worth seeing, I think.
In the hands of a lesser filmmaker, the script problems in his movies would show up more.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But he's a craftsman who makes these things that look like it's all a big, one big moving machine, right?
Right. So he's getting away with it so far, and you know, we'll see how long
it happens. What? At this point, saying someone's getting away with it so far after they've had like 5 successful movies is like, you know what? He could make 7 just crap fests in a row, and it doesn't matter.
I keep waiting for him to do the Howard Hughes thing that he's been big on, and there was I guess it's he wanted to do a Howard Hughes biopic.
Oh my god!
I don't know that it would be the same as the one Scorsese did, or like, and I've heard people like joke around or talk about, and DiCaprio could be in it. It would just be the sequel, but with 2 different directors. That would be weird. But I kind of just want that to get done so that can be done, because like that's the only thing I think of that sounds like something he's really big on and wants to do. And it's like, get that done and then go do some fun stuff.
Fun stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it can be inventive. It can be cool.
His dream is to make a lot of light, fun stuff.
Well, I mean,
no, I don't know if you would ever say any of these things are fun.
I consider them fun in the sense that they're not like Merchant Ivory.
John Wick was fun.
Okay. You're right.
Interstellar is like, it's kind of heavy, but it's, like, it's spectacular, you know?
Right.
John Wick is not spectacular, but it's fun.
Okay, I'll give you that. Speaking of which, did you actually see John Wick?
Oh, yeah.
Can you give us a quick little
I'm not going to give you a
taste.
Quick anything.
Give me a taste? Oh, I have to.
You can go straight to hell.
I have to dip my own wick?
Yeah, you got
to
dip your own wick.
Okay.
I will tell you this much. There is a hotel exclusively for hitmen, and there's a nightclub
exclusively
for hitmen within the hotel.
Well, of course. That's probably a bar.
And Ian McShane is like the main guy in there.
He's like the one that runs the club?
Yeah, kind of. He's in there and he's writing things on a notepad. That's what he does at a corner booth.
That sounds fairly watchable.
Oh yeah,
I'd want to watch this.
It's hella. I'm gonna use a word I don't use. It's hella watchable. John Wick, 3.5 out of 5.
Wow, same as Monster Squad. No, Monster Squad you gave 3. Same as
Interstellar.
It's Interstellar for you.
I mean, if I'm gonna rewatch one of them,
you're gonna rewatch John Wick, right? Yeah, Interstellar will take a while. You'll have to be in the right mood.
No, I definitely. If I'm ever going to watch this again, it'll have to be one of those things where I'm like, you know what? Like, I will have had to have a really good day to think that I can sit there and watch a 2 hour and 42 minute long movie.
About the precipice of defeat?
Yeah, that's not the kind of thing I usually like watching.
It's not the kind of thing
I would choose to watch. I don't like really things about humanity ending and
I'm interested in that stuff a lot, but I'm you know, also not looking for that all the time. You know, I'd have it in my collection, and I would go to it once every 3 or 4 years when I was in the right mood for that story idea or something to play with it. I don't know. Maybe I'll never want to watch it again. Sometimes movies get you that way, and then you're just like, that was my first time. That was my only time. I value what I got out of it, and people can come along, and I feel no need to really debate it. If someone says that was, you know, pretentious garbage, I'm like, okay, I don't I don't know.
That's because you're holier than thou.
No, it's not that. Better.
Not that. The only time you can ever let something like that go is if you're feeling just really condescending about it. Because when you really want to press a point and you plead...
Are you talking about me specifically?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you plead and grasp for people to cling on to your weak idea,
uh-huh.
that's when you really know that you're not so strong on it. Like your garbage about the outlaw hero.
Okay.
You try so desperately to foist it upon others.
Put that into the
But if you're really condescending, like to the point where like, I know I'm better than this asshole right here.
Right.
Then you'll be like, oh, okay, that's what you think? All right, that's cool.
So you're basically just saying that you're just affirming what I just said, which is
no, like, not at all.
Some sort of confident, sort of general.
It's not confident.
Sense of where I'm at.
It's condescending.
Oh, okay.
Because if you really want, if you want to be the kind of person who wants people to agree with you, then you should always attack opposing opinions with fervor.
Fervor.
Religious fervor.
Proselytize the good stuff.
You should.
You know, have you heard about this? Have you seen?
Have you heard the good news about outlaw heroes?
All throughout the great media.
I'd like to
tell
you about outlaw heroes today. Can I come in?
The first strict definition was probably given by Captain Goda and Pat Labor 2, the movie, towards the end. And describing the difference between, you know, different elements of the public sector and their relationship to service of the people or whatever. Just shakes his head. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Everything okay?
I'm just looking at the Christmas lights out there.